Today, another swipe at banking separation. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to our latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Today, I'm joined by Robbie Barwick from the CC. Hello, Robbie.
Hello, Martin.
Thanks for joining us again. And I think some congratulations are in order because I know that behind the scenes you've been pulling a few strings. And as a result, the Glass-Steagall bill is alive and well and kicking.
It absolutely is. And if you call it pulling strings, it's more like that story of the turnip. It's I might have my hands on the string at the front, but there's thousands of Australians behind us, and that's where the power comes from. So yeah, it is, and it's a delicious story too. The irony shouldn't be lost on anyone. I think you got to contrast the surge in the share price of the banks on the Tuesday after the Royal Commission report was made public, which, according to Michael Pascoe at least, who's, you know, a very well-connected finance reporter, he wrote in the New Daily that the leak that initially caused the surge and then the surge the next day was on the news, they wouldn't be broken up, right? I know from our experience we've gone around the world and participated in debates on this question of separation. I know what a big deal it is, and the banks in their minds would have thought, the Royal Commission's final report was the final word on it, right? Good, dead and buried. Bow, bow. So a week later, Pauline Hanson goes into the Senate and introduces our bill. Now, our bill, the CEC drafted this bill, but it's not our invention. We drafted it very carefully based on the United States Glass-Steagall Act of 1933, the original one that worked, right, for nearly 7 years, the updated 21st Century Glass-Steagall Act that's a bill currently before the US Congress, and adapted it for, there's the idiosyncrasies of the Australian financial system. So that bill is now in there. And the better part is not just having the bill in there. One of the reasons we wanted to get into the Senate is because there's a lot more crossbench support in the Senate on this issue of separation. Now, that's not to say there's not a lot of support in the House, but, there's a smaller crossbench in the House. And although there's good support among backbenchers of the major parties, they don't get to have a say on this yet, right? That hasn't percolated to the top. So it's in the Senate that there's a lot more support, and that was able to be used to refer this to the Senate Economics Legislation Committee, and we now have an inquiry, and that is key. We have a three-month inquiry, and so what we've achieved is the inquiry, the open public inquiry into separation that Hayne was not allowed to have, right? Although it came up repeatedly in his hearings, but Hayne was not allowed to have it from his terms of reference. That's what the banks did to rig that Royal Commission. They got the result they wanted. Now we've got the inquiry that we want. And so the purpose of this discussion today is we need everybody to participate in this process through making submissions.
Yeah, absolutely, Robbie. Well, it's a very interesting journey because, of course, the original bill was put into, the other house, as it were. It fell off there simply because it ran out of time. But it's now back and bigger and stronger than ever. And as you say, it's the inquiry part which is really now quite powerful because, essentially, there will be an opportunity to put a lot of direct input from the broader community into this debate.
Yes.
Now, I don't know whether you know yet precisely the arrangements of doing that. I haven't been able to find it, but I've actually already been invited by that inquiry to make a submission by the 12th of April, I think it is.
Well, let me give people details on this because, I want to urge all the viewers of the DFA channel to participate. And if I can give them a compliment, I say to the viewers now who are watching this, let me put it to you that you've got an extra responsibility to participate because you are an educated audience, right? By virtue of being a DFA viewer, you're educated on this subject. And that's what we need. We need the public to make submissions. So you can, when an organization, say like GetUp, runs a campaign, what they tend to have to do is use form letters. Right, and you get everyone to sign the same thing and forward it, thousands of copies to MPs, etc. that proves there's numbers involved, but doesn't prove much more than that, right? I think we can show there's been a huge debate on Glass-Steagall in Australia, such that there's a lot of recognition in the public as to what it means, right? And that can be proved by everybody who's watching this now making the effort to make a submission, and the submission should be on the term, on the provisions of the bill. But from your own, in your own words, the submissions don't have to be long. If you want to make them long, fine. Put every, you know, there's a reason you watch a channel like this. Put your concerns on paper, but address it in the context of this bill, and let these politicians know that that the public is educated on this subject, and that's the basis of them wanting it. So, just the specifications to let's get that out of the way first. The submissions are open now, right? People can make a submission anytime. They close on the 12th of April. So effectively, you know, what's that? A bit over 6 weeks from now. That's actually a good time, a good block of time to make submissions. A year ago when the bail-in bill was put up for consultation, the APRA Crisis Resolution Powers Bill, they only gave us a month to generate submissions, and we got over 2,000 submissions made to that, right? So now we've got almost double that time. Let's break a record here. Let's get 5,000 to 10,000 submissions to this inquiry. So you've got the 12th of April to do it. People can get these details off our website, Martin. You can put the link on the bottom here, but that's the main thing. The 12th of April, it's the committee is the Senate Standing Committee on Economics, and you send it to Post Office Box 6100, Parliament House, Canberra, ACT 2600. So Senate Standing Committee on Economics, PO Box 6100, Parliament House, Canberra, ACT 2600. Now, that said, look, it's better if you can go to our website to the press release we put out, because there's a link there to the committee's website. They would prefer you to upload a submission electronically, right? And we should try and do that as much as possible. If you're more comfortable, you know, do what you're most comfortable with. If you're more comfortable writing it out and mailing it, do that, right? Don't worry about what they'd prefer. But I think, you know, most people here will be watching this on the internet. Pretty much everybody by definition, sorry. So you know how to use the internet, upload a submission, and you have to get that detail off there. So look at the link below this, and you'll be able to click on our press release and go to the link to the committee's website. Right. So they're the technical details. You've got till the 12th of April to do it. But like I said, you are an educated audience. Right? You've self-selected yourself. You're interested in the subject. I think I wouldn't be shocking anybody to make the observation that you would have all experienced people who would prefer not to have to think about these things. And unfortunately, a lot of them are the ones that are now suddenly finding themselves underwater with, you know, negative equity in property and rising mortgage stress and all those kind of things. And you think, well, I could have warned you, and I did warn you, and you didn't want to listen. Well, it's happening now, right? So you're the people I tend to see from the comments on your show, Martin, from our show, people sort of, you know, take pride in the fact that they've been following this a lot. Well, okay, do something. And I have to address the naysayers. There's always naysayers who make comments that, you know, this is futile, you'll never get anywhere. Well, if that was true, we wouldn't have got to where we are, right? This is I have experience in the United States, in the United Kingdom, in talking to the politicians there who have been fighting for Glass-Steagall. And yeah, we were up against the most powerful lobby in the world, the banks in Wall Street, the banks in London, the banks in Australia. They do not want to be broken up, right? But what's happened in Australia is extraordinary. Over the course of 18 months, they've gone from hero to zero, right? They've still got their influence in a corrupt way in the Treasury and all that type of thing. They think they can rig these sort of outcomes like they did with the Royal Commission, but all it does is blow up in their face. And we now have more people have come out publicly demanding separation since the Royal Commission's final report than before, and led by none other than Paul Keating, of all people, right? I was able to go to I was in Parliament last week when Paul had introduced the bill, and I'm having lots of meetings. The Labor people I met with, they were quoting Paul Keating to me before I could get around with quoting him to them because, yeah, they took notice. Oh, dear, Paul Keating said this is what the CEC and Martin North and those guys have been saying, but now Paul Keating's saying it, right? Alan Kohler saying it. You know, experienced academics, expert academics are saying it. the non-recommendation of the Royal Committee of the Royal Committee find the report frankly shocked people, and now there's a lot more people there. So the committee is reaching out to those people like it did to you, and we can make this a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely, Robbie. And it's very interesting that Alan Kohler, of course, looked over the submissions to the Royal Commission previously, and he actually said, gee, there's a lot of people talking about Glass-Steagall last time around. We need to get that same sort of momentum happening again, right? Because yes. Because now we've actually got the door ajar, and actually if we push on that door, we will be able to make significant progress. And, you know, I've got a degree of confidence now that there is enough broad support from various sectors of the community and from particular alumni as well, you know, from Alan Fells through to whoever else, you know, politicians too. There is a real serious opportunity here to change the shape of banking to benefit Australians and Australia. And that's what this is about.
I appreciate your observation from your perspective on that, because that's how we feel as well. And you can tell the viewers we haven't compared notes before this interview, right? Yeah. We've both been plugging this for a long time. The I just want to divert a bit though, based on what you just said, because there's an element here where people should feel like, you know, this is an opportunity to stick it up them. And I'll tell you why, because what Alan Kohler said in that was an article in the 3rd December Australian last year, and he just off his own back got on the Royal Commission website, and every submission he saw called for separation, right? In the section on separation in the Royal Commission final report, there's a line there that said virtually none of the submissions called for separation. That line is a blatant lie. Now Commissioner Hayne did not write that, right? He wrote the little coloured words at the end of that chapter. This is Treasury. You know, John Dalston's been talking about this. Martin Wilson Tsai's been talking about this. They're experienced in how these kind of Treasury rigged this. The Treasury Secretary, people from Treasury and the Attorney General's office who provide the Secretary for this, they wrote a barefaced lie in that report, right? And now I've got no confidence, Martin, that Hayne even saw most of these submissions. You know, and you can see how it was rigged. So I'm not condemning Hayne. That was a lie. Well, that's the lengths they went to rig this outcome, right? Well, when you send a submission to this inquiry, there's, I think, six or seven senators on the committee. They've all got to read them, right? Now, if we get 10,000 submissions, they're not going to read all of them, but they will know what's in them, right? There'll be four submissions from the big banks, Treasury, RBA. So there'll be like eight submissions from the financial authorities saying don't do this, and there'll be 10,000 submissions say do it, right? And that's those are the numbers that they see, and every other single member of parliament in Canberra will know that's what happened, that the committee was flooded with these demands. And think about this: the committee ends on the third; it's due to hand down its report on the 13th of May. Now, I want to impress upon people, the outcome of the report to me is almost irrelevant. Right, because I know Jane Hume is going to be chairing this committee. She's a banker from NAB and a few other investment banks. She's the one who rigged the inquiry into the APRA bill, the APRA bail-in bill. You know, they're going to do what they're going to do, right? That's not what's going to get the politicians' attention. What's going to get the politicians' attention is the process if we can generate it. We'll be putting out a call tomorrow for this committee to hold public hearings. Now, if that gets to happen, that's a much more powerful process, right? They get recorded. People can watch them on the internet. The type of people who will testify before those hearings, it will make much more of an impression on the senators and the committee, right? To actually have to talk to people. I know John. I've spoken to John Dalston about this, former ANZ banker. He's prepared to go in there and argue that not only is separation good for Australia, it's good for the banks to be broken up, right?
Yes.
And that's a powerful argument to put up against these clowns running banks now, who will be going, oh, don't break us up, don't take away our gouging machinery, right? So, you know, that'll be a powerful process. And if they try and avoid having public hearings, well, we can ask Jane Hume to recuse herself, right, because of her conflict of interest, and we can point out what that conflict of interest is. But this could go anywhere in the next 3 months. I'm also going to be reaching out to experts overseas in countries like the United States, where they had Glass-Steagall, and there are people who have positions in the US financial system who are very forceful advocates of Glass-Steagall, and they will happily testify that here's how Glass-Steagall worked when it was in place, here's what happened once we repealed it, right? It's a pretty black and white story, and I've cleared it with the committee. They're open to receiving international submissions, and we can make this the inquiry that it deserves to be.
Absolutely. And just going back to John Dalson, I actually interviewed him yesterday and put up a post, because he went through, if you like, the five or six key points that he has from a businessman's perspective as to why separation is actually appropriate. And basically argues that it's good for customers. It's actually good for shareholders because you can release value. It actually reduces risks in the system. It solves the too big to fail problem. It solves the derivatives problem. And essentially, it frees banks to lend for productive purposes rather than where they are at the moment. So there are a whole bunch of reasons in his particular post that, you know, if people want to get some ideas, watch that post. I'll put a link up there. Yep. I'm also proposing to do a couple more posts on this as well, again, to provide more material. Not that we want to be quoted verbatim in individuals' submissions, but what we want to do is to give people enough material to be able to get their minds around it and to be able to put an argument up to help create momentum. Because, as you say, you know, we'll be able to pull in overseas perspectives too, but I do think the weight of numbers in terms of the number of people who actually say this is important and this is what should be done will actually really help to make sure that this doesn't get buried.
Yeah, so just to be clear, please, everyone make a submission. Click on the links for the details. The submission is on the provisions of the bill, so make sure you look at the bill. All in the links, you'll see when you get to the Parliament's inquiry website, you can get a copy of it. It says information about the bill. You get a copy of the bill, you get the explanatory memorandum, right? So when you get that, the explanatory memorandum is easy to read. It's up to you what to do. You could make a general submission on how you view the principle of Glass-Steagall compared to what we've got now, the principle of separation. You also have the opportunity, you could make some specific comments on the provisions in the bill, right? It's laid out in different sections. The last section, section 14, the biggest section, it actually is on APRA, which brings APRA under much tighter parliamentary control. This is a failed, discredited regulator, and it does require this kind of treatment, right? So you can make comments on that. So you could take that approach, be as in-depth as you like or be as general as you like, but, you know, you're qualified, you're more qualified than most people. I would even say than most bankers. You're more qualified than most bankers to make these submissions. So please do. Don't put it off. And 12th of April comes and it's 13th of April. It's like, oh, I missed that. Please don't do that. Don't convince yourself that it's futile. That's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Please don't do that. And let's, you know, there's if DFA viewers do it, all the people that we've been organising around the country do it, all the different bank victims groups do it, right, we can really send a message here to Parliament. Mm. Now, at the end of the day, the timing of the election is beautiful because, yes, the major parties share about $2.6 million in donations from the banks. Yes, they're a powerful lobby, right? But all that counts for naught in the election. It's the votes that count. And if they have a sense that this is what's out there, that's really going to get their attention. I was told a story this morning about a National Party MP near the Murray River there, who was at an event. The person who told us was at some field day or whatever. He saw the MP talking to a man in a wheelchair, and the man in the wheelchair was talking loudly, accosting this MP about the need for Glass-Steagall and breaking up the banks. And this man who told us, he agreed with that, of course. He didn't know who the person in the wheelchair was. He went over and joined in the conversation to impress upon the MP the same thing. And then a third bloke turned up and added his voice to it. None of these three people knew each other, right? But they're all on the same page about this. And for that MP, now he'd be sending emails all around Australia now to his fellow parliamentarians saying, this is what just happened to me, right? That's what gets gets their attention.
Absolutely. So the real groundswell that we can create can make a huge, huge difference, right? And, you know, I get some cynical people saying, oh, you know, it's all fixed and, you know, the result is already defined and it's not worth it. No, I think here, this is a real opportunity. And in a way, it's, you know, just deserts from all of the stupidity that we've seen through the Royal Commission and before with regard to this particular issue. But more important, the tricky issues from Treasury and from the regulators, and the fact that really the banks have done Australia very poorly. You know, just to be clear, the returns from Australian banks are way higher than they should be, and it's all because they've basically got a monopoly on the way that the markets work here, and they've got the whole thing stitched up from end to end. And as we saw in the Royal Commission, there's an issue with regard to advice versus you know, selling products, and it's all scrambled up together. That needs to be teased apart. And then the various vertical divisions from the corporate bank, from the retail bank, from insurance, from wealth management, all being scrambled together means basically the banks currently control the whole value chain, not to the benefit of Australians or Australia, but to the benefit of their own bottom line. And that's why this is critical. And of course, just to re-emphasize the other point, this diffuses the critical risks that we have at the moment. So for example, if the derivatives section of the market started to fall over because of an international crisis, that would immediately hit deposits sitting in the banks here, because effectively they could be bailed in to support and save banks overseas. Yep. And that's because the corporate sector and the derivatives part is all scrambled up into retail banking. That's why we need to tease it apart, so that we've got a retail bank that supports retail customers and does the things that people need in terms of credit and those other things, but completely separate from those highly speculative risk-on-risk ventures that the rest of the banking is doing at the moment. And if we can effectively do that, it de-risks the banking system, it takes away the too-big-to-fail problem, and potentially allows banks to offer products and services at a lower price, more tailored to what people need here. So there's a real economic possibility of an outcome which will benefit Australia.
Yep. The those profits the banks make, that's coming out of our pockets, right? And then with that, and they have the cheek to turn around and go, oh, yeah, but you get it back in your superannuation because all the super funds are invested in the banks. Well, what a deal, right? Who knows what condition they're going to be in by the time we all retire. You know, no, it's a joke. So that the one benefit they claim, right, is not a benefit at all. Instead, what you have is a banking system that has, by having this vertical integration, horizontal integration, these integrated systems, the banking system has decoupled itself from the actual economy. It can make profits whether the economy is doing well or whether the economy is doing badly. When really, if you think about it, the banking system should only make profits if the economy is doing well. If it's helping the economy do well, it should profit. If it's not helping the economy do well, it shouldn't do well, right? But that doesn't work anymore. It's a different system. This is the reason it's been gouging us too long. And I want to emphasize this point too, Martin. Integrated banking is pretty new, right? The banks are conjuring up all kinds of scare stories. Oh, no, there's too much disruption to the system. This is a 20-year experiment we've had with integrated banking worldwide. It's been a disaster. Right, you've got a much longer history of stability in the financial system before banking integration. And even Paul Keating, there's so much I disagree with Paul Keating in terms of the history of bank deregulation in Australia, but I would grant him that when he was doing all those things I disagree with, he was doing it in a framework where you didn't have this kind of mass integration of banks, right? And Lord Lawson in the United Kingdom says the same thing. Lord Nigel Lawson was Thatcher's Chancellor of the Exchequer. He presided over the big bang. He said it was an unintended consequence. They didn't realise you'd have this mass merger of banks, right, to create this monster. So they didn't even consider this could happen. They've now also been able to look at the results and go, no, that's a disaster. Change it, right? So to me, it's a black and white issue. Only the banks oppose it, and they're stooges, frankly. So that's on one side. But it's a political fight. Right, it's not going to come from convincing people with the quality of our argument. It's going to come from, although that's important, I don't want to undermine that, but it really is going to come from the public showing the government that this is what we want. So please, make a submission.
Yeah, thanks, Robbie. Well, I appreciate your time today, and I think what we should do is check back in a month or so to see how progress is tracking. And in the meantime, we'll continue to spread the word and share some of the ideas. As you say, it's a combination of the idea, but also the weight of numbers. So, you know, what I'm saying to my viewers is share this post, you know, get other people involved, use the social media channels to effectively flex our muscles so that we can actually take banking to where it needs to be in Australia. And if we are successful, this could be a really important turning point for our economy here, but potentially also banking around the world as well. So this is a really, really important opportunity on a bigger scale as well.
Absolutely. The world's been watching us for the last year, right, on this issue, and there for that reason. So let's start something in Australia.
Yep, we'll give it a good go. Thanks, Robbie. Good to talk to you.
Thanks, man.
Take care. Bye.